put your hands together for the hardest working man in the game industry, the one-man vortex of gaming information, the man who is Gordon Freeman's thesis advisor at MIT. Ladies and gentlemen, Gaming Steve!
Hey, this is Gaming Steve. I'm coming to you from Game Developers Conference 2007, day one. Well, really day three, but it's actually day one of where the events were actually open to the public and that we were actually to see things such as the keynote and sessions. And with me, I have Gamer Andy, a.k.a. Adam. How are you doing? What should I call you, Adam or Andy?
Call me Andy. Everybody else does.
So you actually have two gamers. You have Gaming Steve and you have Gamer Andy. It's like close, but not quite the same thing. So we're going to go around and talk about what we saw today. We'll talk about the Sony keynote and anything else cool that we saw on the floor, anything. And let's kick it off with the Sony keynote. So the Sony keynote... I'll say, in my opinion, on the scale of 1 to 10, I thought they actually hit a 10. And I'll go into a little more detail, but what did you think, Andy?
First off, I want to say welcome back to the podcasting scene. You've been gone a while. And it's good to see one of the old faces back here.
Yeah, I'm going to go into that. I try to ignore all that, but I'll put it this way. Having one kid is a lot of work until you have two kids, and then you realize, wow, one kid sure was a piece of cake. two kids is like juggling chainsaws while I don't know, walking on water. It's a lot of work, to say the least. So, yeah, now it's getting a little bit more calm, and it'll probably get back to a gaming schedule. And I figured I started the show at GDC 2 years ago, so I figured this was a good time to pick it back up is at GDC. So, thanks, man. Back to the keynote.
Question.
Yeah.
I got to agree with you. I came to the... to the Sony presser straight from the Microsoft blogger breakfast thinking, oh, you know, this is going to be another Sony conference that I'm going to sit through, painfully grimace, and then chuckle at afterwards. And, you know, I think they really knocked this one out of the park. It was without a doubt the best press event by any stretch of the imagination that I've seen from them in years. I mean... Yeah.
I mean, I've seen pretty much all the press events in the last 10 years, and this is the first one they seem to actually, and including E3s, that they really had a very tight presentation. Phil was really, really relaxed. He seemed to have a very focused agenda. Even things right away went wrong, and they didn't panic. I was thinking to myself, oh my God, if this doesn't work, and the press is going to just rip him to shreds. But, you know, it was a little bit of confusion, but they did. They really did a really good job. They must have been practicing like crazy for this thing.
Well, yeah, actually, a version of the speech that we saw today leaked out. Turns out it was incorrect in a lot of details, but apparently someone did overhear him practicing. And yeah, but you know, really, I think that for so long we've been used to Sony being to. How do I say this? We've been very used to anything that Sony doesn't do terribly has been good news for them. And this is, and so now that there's actually really, frankly, very impressive software and developments on the market or on the horizon, now it's just, it's like spectacular. I am going to buy PlayStation 3 because of this conference. And that's saying a lot.
Okay, so we've been talking about for like 3 minutes how awesome it was. Let's actually say why it was so awesome. A lot of you probably know by now, you know, they talked about a few things. They talked about their new home service. They talked about Little Big Planet, and they talked about SingStar and a few other things. But let's talk about their home service. Now, of course, this was semi-leaked a couple of days ago, but you know what? It just didn't do it justice. I didn't even read any of the leaked information because I knew anything that was leaked was going to be just a smidgen of what we actually saw. And it's hard to explain. I mean, there's a lot of pictures online. You can definitely try to find them, check it out. It's sort of like a virtual 3D world / avatar system / Sims 2 experience / MMO experience. It's like they took a little bit of everything and combined it into this unique world that will tie directly into the PS3. Andy, got anything?
All with really, really good graphics, which I think is key. You know, I mean, that's one thing that the PlayStation 3 has to do. If they ever release something that has subpar graphics, I mean, that's going to be horrible. The Wii can get away with it because it's got that control system. But getting back to the actual topic at hand, You know, the first thing that I thought of was they're going to make so much money with this service, because every time you would go through something, you would like, he would point out, you know, and this this large screen display here in this central room, you can run ads on that, or we can run game videos or promotional stuff. And I was like, oh my God. And then he was talking about banner ads, and then you look to the side and there are these vertical banners that are displaying ads, and they are literally banner ads, and it's just, they're going to make disgusting amounts of money off of that service.
I don't know how much money they're really going to make, because Xbox already does that already, but you know, is, you know, and I'm not exactly sure how much they make on their you know, the Xbox Live aspects, where they're always advertising, you know, the latest movies and things like that, and putting up trailers. I think it's a small amount. It's, what was more important was the fact that they were able to finally, you know, just make the PS3 a distinctive entity. You know, up to this point, it's been a gaming machine. It, actually, that's the problem. It hasn't been a gaming machine. It's been a way to pimp Blu-ray discs. And people take, you know, precedent. People get upset with me when I say that, but it's true. I mean, Sony, I grew up with Sony from, you know, from the 70s on. And, you know, they are about technologies and about proprietary technology, starting with, as early as I can remember, Betamax, and going forward. And, you know, to them, that's more important. But now they finally are able to distance themselves and show you, hey, look, this is the, you can only experience this home system on the PS3. You can't do it anywhere else.
Well, you know, for me, what this really shows, and I think is the most important thing and the most valuable thing that Sony could have done today, is it shows that Sony is taking a step back from being a hardware company and actually embracing this the software side of it, which is something that the other two companies, Nintendo and Microsoft, have done well. Microsoft has done well because they are a software company first, and Nintendo has kind of caught on with their channel system, which I think actually does do a fair job. But Sony really, the cross-media bar seemed rushed, and this really seems like the first, this seems like a real interface and a real innovative way for them to get their message out, frankly, that it is all about community. Another thing I want to address real quick.
Talk all you want, man.
Okay,
that's
okay.
The whole point.
Okay.
Hot mic.
So, I'm really big on not only downloadable content, which I know is a big buzzword right now, but also user-created content, which is an even bigger buzzword. And I have been at the Microsoft event I went to previously. I asked them about user-created content because they have their infamous Velocity Girl whole thing, where you'll have someone who doesn't actually care about games who can just get on her Xbox 360 and make a custom skateboard because she's a really good artist, and then sell it and then convert the money and use it to buy other games and stuff like that. And that's an experience that does not exist in reality. And so I have asked about that any opportunity I've had over the past 2 years, and it's always been, oh, you know, it'll be 6 months, oh, it'll be, you know, a year, we're working on the tools. And now they're saying that it's here with the new thing that Forza is doing, which is you can make your cars, you can design them, you can do custom paint jobs, then you can lock them and sell them within the game to other players who then cannot unlock, and you essentially own the paint SKU or the design of the car. So that's their version of user-created content. And then you look at what Sony shows us, and it's like, this is not even comparable. This is light years. This is decades ahead of what Microsoft is doing.
Yeah, I mean, when I saw this, I was thinking almost like, you know, Snow Crash. Like, this is the first time where I've seen a true interactive world that was described in a book like Snow Crash, where, you know, you have a 3D avatar, which looks phenomenal. It's like, you know, I called it the Sims 2 on steroids. You know, it looks actually very much like the Sims 2, but with the PS3 engine, it is almost Pixar quality. I mean, the graphics were really, really stunning. Obviously, you're going to need a nice TV to show that, but, you know, who here doesn't have an HD TV at this point? At least the serious gamers now. But it really does look amazing. You're able to customize your avatar, and then you can actually talk to people in, you know, public areas, both, you know, using just a regular keyboard. I almost called it a typewriter. Using a keyboard, or just using voice IP, you know, you could do it that way. And then you also had areas that you can customize a la Sims, your apartment, you can drop things into it. I was thinking kind of like Oblivion, where you can do that, where you actually get to buy these houses, and you get to customize them. And EverQuest 2, you get to do the same thing. And they finally, you know, took this to the next step. And, you know, it's But the question is, it's like, okay, they seem to do a lot, and it's very cool environment. It's something we haven't seen. It's sort of like taking the best of every system currently out. But what does it really have to do with games? Is it going to be enough?
It doesn't have to do with games. It has to do with community, which is something that I think that Sony has learned from Microsoft, which is incredibly important. You can have, frankly, subpar games. If you have a good community built around it, then they will take those games and, you know, just they'll deal with it and they'll find new ways to enjoy it. And so I think that that's something that they're trying to do. One thing that concerns me about this new home system is that every time they would mention a system, they would mention, you know, they would mention, here are the clothes. You can download additional clothes, which can either be free or you can purchase. Now, in Microsoft land of DLC, that means you'll get one thing free and there will be 5 billion things that you can purchase, and they will be overpriced. Additionally, you each get each person on the home network gets their own apartment, gets their own private space that they can then invite people to, and that's what you were talking about, where they can furnish that area. So the base apartment that you start off with is, you know, a one-bedroom apartment. You know, something when you first move to the city, it's that minus the bathroom. You know, so and then they showed a more advanced version, that they said that you can upgrade to, and I really question what the upgrade system is, because if they mean, you know, I can spend $15 and then I have a bigger room in this thing, then it's not actually a free game. It's actually a potentially very expensive game in the realm of what they were originally planning for the Gran Turismo release, with you can buy the cars. Yeah,
I don't know. I mean, that's a good point. You know, my opinion is, I don't know how they're going to do it, but if I was in charge, I mean, I would do something a little bit like what Guild Wars does, is that there's multiple ways. If you want to buy it, you can just spend money and buy it. Or if you want to actually, for instance, earn points by playing PS3 games and then converting your points into prizes, that would also accomplish that goal. I would be curious to see exactly how. They didn't really go into that. They just sort of alluded to it, and they showed that they said you can buy things, but they didn't explain exactly how you would get those items. But I would imagine, yeah, I'm going to be curious to see whether they're going to try to get money, or they're going to try to, you know, use their products, you know, PS3 games and other developers and other systems, and even Blu-ray discs. You know, it's like every time you put a Blu-ray DVD in there, or Blu-ray B-ray, whatever the heck they call them, you get, you know, whatever, 1,000 Sony points, and then you can use that to buy a TV, or you can use it to buy a couch. And that would probably be the best way, at least in my opinion, and the most insidious way, of course, as well. But hey, you know, this is what it's all about. I mean, people are thinking, oh, you know, they're doing this, you know, to make a really nice, beautiful community. But in the end, it's all about the money.
Right. I think that this product, that the service, is really drawing a lot from Second Life's success. And because of that, I think that they'll probably adopt a similar profit system from that, where as if you want to just be a regular user, then you can be a regular user. But if you want to, like, be an Uber user and host parties and things like that, then you'll shell out the money for it. And I think that, you know, it's the sort of thing where it all depends on what the cost structure is. If they're charging 10 cents for a really cool shirt, then that's something that I'll buy into, you know, get a couple, you know, spend a couple bucks. But if, you know, it's like 80 cents, $1.50 even, I mean, these are not large numbers, but when you get into, you know, buying a wardrobe, what are you going to do? You know what I mean? It adds up.
Yeah, but I can imagine, like, people say The Gap or, I don't know, or Mark Echo or someone, you know, they might want to get their designs up there and, you know, make people pay a little bit, or not even, maybe give them that for free so you can see what that shirt looks like on your virtual avatar. I mean, this actually is, this could really start opening up other avenues that they might not even have thought of. Well, they probably thought of them and they want to start exploiting them. But, so yeah, the home system, there was other cool things in there. There was, like, this Hall of Fame, which you get trophies of games that are 3D trophies that you can then, you know, display in, like, your trophy case. But they were Xbox achievements, basically. And there was one thing that was pretty cool, is that you could view all the trophies, and it looked like the Senate chamber from Star Wars Episode 1. It was, like, gargantuan. It was very cool.
Yeah, absolutely. I was trying to think of which episode that was from, and you're absolutely right. That was that was the first episode of Star Wars. It looked exactly like that, with the, you know, descending pit with all the balconies and just off into the distance. No, absolutely. It was great. And Yeah, you know, when this leaked, I don't know if you were paying attention at the time, or you said you hadn't read most of it. The thought was that it was taking the Mii system and adding the achievement system to it, basically taking the best of both and making a hybrid product. And essentially, that's what's been happened. That's what's happened. Except they also added in Second Life to that, and then they made it all incredibly pretty. You know, I cannot stress this enough. Just how gorgeous this looks and how much of an impact that has on the appeal.
Yeah, I mean, now you're really starting to see the true power of the PS3. And, you know, people who like The Sims and, you know, some, I was talking to people, and these are hardcore gamers, of course, today, and they, you know, they thought, oh, yeah, it's cool, but that was it. And, but you know what? You're right. Maybe the hardcore gamer, this means nothing to them, but there's a lot of people out there. I mean, The Sims is only the best-selling game of all time. You know, this, obviously, there's a market out there that likes to, you know, basically play dress up or dolls with, you know, 3D avatars. And Second Life, although not like World of Warcraft success, has a very strong niche. And when they see this, they're going to go crazy. I mean, actually, I'm curious to see what other content can be created. It definitely seemed very PG, but they said there's going to be tools in there. So I'm wondering how much control they're going to keep on this, because something else you could do is, for instance, you can take a television set and then put movies on it, whatever, you know, you can put an MP3 on it, MOV on it. You could put something that you have from your, you know, from your memory card and then watch it. So there's nothing preventing you from getting some X-rated movies and having a party or God knows what else is going to happen.
Right. The first thing that I thought of when I saw him pulling movies off of his hard drive was this would actually be a really good way to sit around with voice chat in a virtual space and watch a movie together. Actually, you know, just like if somebody, you know, had a movie that came out or didn't come out, as the case would be, you know, you could go to your virtual apartment and hang out with a bunch of friends and do this. You know, the other thing is, and don't steal my idea, is we will definitely be doing a video talk show in this and grabbing the output. And, you know, and with the way the gesture system works, very plausible, you know, very doable. And I think that we'll see a lot of that from the Machinima community.
Yeah, I mean, definitely would be able to tie into if they got a, you know, a deal with like YouTube or something, and then you could be sitting there in your virtual apartment seeing YouTube videos. I mean, yeah, what makes me so excited about this is that, I mean, we can just keep going on. There's so many possibilities, you know, it's like we should move on, but that's what makes it exciting, is that finally we have something we could talk about. We'll probably be talking about it for a while now. They're going to be able to leak a little bit of information, you know, piecemeal breadcrumb us for the next, I don't know, 9 months until Christmas.
Well, the beta starts next month.
Right,
open
that's
beta.
Right, that's
large
right.
Open beta was what they said.
That's right. The beta starts next month. So I don't know how that's going to work. I imagine if you buy a PS3, hey, you're in the beta, which means, hey, maybe we'll actually go get PS3s now.
Right. That's my thought, is that if that's how they end up doing it, then I will be buying a PS3, which is something that I had not really considered otherwise. I was waiting for Warhawk, and now Warhawk is a little bit different, and, you know. Yeah. How do you justify a $600 console?
Yeah, I mean, myself is that, you know, there was just only one real game, Resistance Fall of Man, that I was interested in. And, you know, I have everything, and I'm going to buy it eventually. But right now, there's just not enough to compel me to buy it. But I saw that. I was like, all right, now I'm interested. Now I actually want to try it out. But the other one that was really cool was Little Big Planet. And that was made by Media Molecule, which is a new company. It's the same guys who did Ragdoll Kung Fu. And it's a really cool game. It's hard to describe how cool this is. And it wasn't even really truly a game. Again, it was more like an interactive environment where you can sort of just hang out with your friends and build very, very realistic 3D worlds and then just sort of, I don't know, interact with them. I mean, that's all this really was, but yet it was phenomenal.
Right. It's like a... It's like if you had, if you were hanging out with your friends and you had this set of magical Legos that you could wave your arms around, and it would form into really cool things that would then animate and act realistically with physics, and you could climb all over them and stuff like that, and they weren't pokey. That's pretty much what it is. You know, it's a program, I don't really want to call it a game, based entirely around user-created content. Mm-hmm. And it's, you're right, it's very hard to describe in full, you know, to give it its justice.
Yeah, I mean, what I was thinking at it was when I was looking at it, it was like a 2D scrolling platform. I mean, it's all it really is. It's like, okay, wow, this is a 3D game, and we're getting so excited about a 2D scrolling platform game with 3D sprites, basically. But what made it so much fun is you can play with four other, at least they showed four people playing simultaneously. You could work together. People were building levels, and then, you know, the whole goal level was just to go, at least the demo we saw, is to start, you know, from one side and get to the other side, and you had to work together to sort of get there. You had to pull down certain, as you know, certain things, and build little like forts out of pillows almost, and then climb up there and you know, just sort of make seesaws work. Again, it was one of those things that finally you also saw the PS3 engine. It was just absolutely gorgeous. I mean, things that look like felt look like felt. Things that look like cloth looked and felt like you felt like I can just reach through the TV and grab that. It really it was a testament to how powerful the PS3 is.
You know, I've always been a advocate of, you know, essentially the PlayStation 3 and the Xbox 360 are comparable in terms of power, and stuff like this, you know, really makes me question that. Yeah, it's the sort of thing where I play a lot of Xbox 360. I own a 360, I own a PC, I own a Wii. And the Wii, I played a lot at first. The 360, I continue to play, though not as much. And the PC I use when a good game comes out. And it seems to me that this is the sort of thing that would make the PS3 essentially replace the 360, if the implementation is what it appears to be. I think that their decision to keep it 2D was a very conscious choice, because they are going for the maximum amount of the design flexibility that you can have. And while a 3D environment would ultimately give you more flexibility, I think that giving someone too many ways to play with it would actually limit it by... would actually limit it.
Yeah, I mean, it actually is. It's sort of like, it is 3D, obviously. It's just the Z-axis is very limited. You can only go, you know, it's almost like I would picture a stage. You know, you have there's a definite front and there's definite back. You know, left and right, you can seem to go in an infinite amount, and up and down, there seems to be no limit. But, you know, you can only go back and forth so much. And once again, they seem to be tapping into whatever they call the game 3.0, you know, thing, you know, media buzzword that's probably going to catch on, and it's not a bad one, where you can actually then share, you can create levels and share them, and people would vote on them, and then you can even modify other people's levels. And again, this seems like something that is absolutely rich and could be a smash success, but then again, we have to see it implemented.
Also, it's easy. I mean, it's easy to do it. They were showing us it. It's the sort of thing I was like, wow, I could do that. And I'm not sure I would want to do that, because you can definitely get sucked into it and put large amounts of time into these projects. But, you know, it's astonishing the amount of flexibility that they give you. And also, and this is the thing that was getting me, is that it will let teams of people actually design these levels together.
Right. That was the fun part, is that you and your friend could sort of, you know, make a level together. And they were showing a sort of video replay later, is that you can be you can design an entire level. Like, one person could be all the way in the front, another person can be all the way in the back, and someone could be like, you know, 5 miles up in the air, and you could still be doing it together. And it was really impressive. I don't know what it was, because it wasn't really a game, but it sure was fun looking.
Right, it's the sandbox.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the closest I've seen to a genre-defining sandbox game. Hmm. You know, Crackdown tried and whatever, but but this is stunning. You know, I feel like I'm drooling over PlayStation for the first time ever, actually.
Yeah, this is the first time when after I came out, I said, okay, now they got something. And I mean, let's even talk about that. You know, this was what they really needed. And it doesn't matter that these weren't really games, that, you know, some people were complaining afterwards and says, you know what, we didn't see any new games. Like, where were the new games? How come they were talking? First of all, this is GDC. This is a game developers conference. They usually don't talk about games, they talk about systems. And second of all, this was a PR move. You know, this was very, very well orchestrated. It was very purposeful, where they had to really stop a ton of bleeding. They had to make people focus on something other than the games, because they were trying to do that. They were trying to focus the press on, we have the most powerful system. We've been the winners the last 10 years in a row. We're, you know, you have to count on us. We're going to do it. And no one was biting. You know, New York Times bashed them not once, but twice. And if the New York Times is bashing you twice, you really got to rethink your strategy. I mean, that's pretty bad. But yeah, this was a really, really good PR move. People are going to be talking about this. People are going to talk about this until they start getting some real games done in a few months from now, or Christmas, should we say. And then, you know, then people will be able to actually concentrate on what it's supposed to be, which is a game platform.
Right, and I think that that's the thing, as you said earlier, is that up until now it really hasn't been. It's been a way to get Blu-ray into homes using the PlayStation name. I mean, the only thing I have left to say is to reiterate that Sony absolutely had a stunning showing today.
Yeah. And it was one of the best presentations, not only just the best Sony presentation I've seen in a long time, it was a superb presentation, period, by any stretch of imagination. Even little things they did is that, even the setup of the stage, I thought was a little strange, because they had this big, gigantic soccer ball on the stage, and they had this weird gear, and I was thinking, what the heck is going on? They had this weird tree, looked like it had a brain on it. I was like, what? It was interesting even just walking into there, and then you found out later that's what they were building, Little Big World. And they started even the conference off, it was starting a little late. I was like, great, here we go again, because that was E3. It was like ridiculously late. It was terrible, and it got people in a bad mood right away. But then they threw out these crazy big huge soccer balls, which of course the press loved, because it was like knocking over their, you know, $10,000 cameras. But it was fun. It was a fun way to start, you know, from beginning, middle, end. I was impressed. I guess they've been listening.
Yeah, you know, it's, they did it right. The only thing that I didn't really understand, but it could be just because I'm American, is the SingStar phenomenon, which I don't know if you want to talk about next.
Yeah, we'll talk about that, and then we can wrap up this portion. Is that, yeah, SingStar, well, I'll tell you why it's a big deal, because, I mean, I'm not a huge American Idol fan, but American Idol is considered, you know, first of all, it's approximately reading worth about $2.5 billion. It is by far, like, the most successful television show in history. I mean, in history, right now on TV. And actually, I forgot who it was. It was like the president of NBC, I think, said that this might be the most successful television show in history. More people vote on, you know, American Idol than they do for the president regularly. I mean, it is a huge phenomenon. And by being able to tap into, you know, the ability for people to sing, download the songs, have sort of a karaoke effect, they record themselves. If you look on YouTube, some of the top-rated, most popular videos are always people singing, and then be able to upload those and have people vote on them within a controlled environment. You and I might not get it, but I know for a fact a lot of other people do.
Something else to note about the YouTube phenomenon with the singing is also usually those high-rated ones are also female and pretty cute.
Well, yeah, and that's news to you?
No, what are you going to do? You know, it's just the way that we operate, I suppose.
I mean, basically what it was is that it was a way for people to, they can download music, they could record themselves singing, they could upload it. You know, again, it was another virtual community. It was sort of like a very organized YouTube, very, very focused towards singing and music. But yeah, again, it's like, it's, you either get it or you don't get it, but obviously a lot of people do get it. I will wonder though if this is the same audience. I mean, it is very popular. It sold millions and millions throughout the world, especially overseas. It's done extremely well, and in Europe it's done phenomenal. But is it the same audience? You know, are people going to go out who really love to sing going to go buy a $600 system?
One of the reasons why I think it's been so successful in Europe is because it's one of the very few titles that localizes so well, where something that they've gone to great lengths to do is not only to do translations and subtitles, but to actually pick specialized content per, not region, but country. So Lithuania will have different songs than Romania, and both of them will get versions. So, I mean, right there, that's a huge thing. And I think that has a lot to do with its success. Also, like you were saying, the price point, I think, is a problem, because right now the PlayStation 2 is very, very cheap. And when you compare that to the PlayStation 3 and realize that unless you're hooked up to high-speed internet, you won't actually be seeing any of these new features compared to the PlayStation 2 version, I don't know. But once again, I suspect it's because I'm an American.
So, well, we'll wrap up that portion. I mean, I don't know what else you saw today. I'll tell you real quick. I went to one of the more interesting seminars they have here is the gaming rants. In the past, they've had the game developers rants where people complain about what's wrong with the industry. Until this time, they had the game publishers rant, and it was very, very good. I mean, we had who did we have? We had people from Vivendi, we had people from Midway, we had people from Manifesto, we had people from EA, and so these were the publishers talking about their problems, and you didn't go to that, did you?
I didn't go to that. I spent the entire day networking.
Oh, really? Okay, well, then I'll talk a little bit real quick, and I'll see what you thought of it. The first thing they were saying, the number one thing, and this is interesting, because I know these guys weren't talking ahead of time. They just would go up, and they would present for about 10 minutes, each of them, what problems they had, and they said the biggest problem right now is there's no leadership for the publishers. There's no strong leadership, and that they still act like little community, multi-billion dollar little community. And it's weird when you hear people like EA, like this is Bing from EA, I forgot his last name, but you know, one of the co-founders of EA saying we need strong leadership. I'm like, wow, this is EA saying we need strong leadership, and then everyone else was saying we need strong leadership. It was almost like, wow, if these guys aren't the leaders, then who is?
Yeah, you know, it seems like everyone thinks that the industry, everyone within this industry still feels like it's very young. And by comparison, it is, compared to movies and music. But the rate of growth dictates the pace that we need to increase our, you know, we need to mature. And I think that will come with time. And I think that time is pretty much now. I think within the next 5 years, we're going to see some very strong organizational structures emerge. And that's when we'll actually start seeing structures, pretty much.
I mean, I think a big part of it is that, you know, when we talk about games, everyone thinks, oh, games are, like, becoming mainstream. They're making a lot of movies. I mean, they're making a lot of money. They're making a lot of money. The big problem with games is just that they're not, okay? Like, okay, they sold 100 million or 110 million PS2s worldwide. Wow. That's 1.6% of the world's population. That's not mainstream, okay? People think, you know, movies are mainstream. Music is mainstream. You know, I can easily list vast majority of my friends and family and colleagues do not play games. Yes, they'll play casual games and things like Tetris. They don't own systems. They don't even own Wii's. They don't own PS2s or anything. And the only way they even own them is because they have a kid, you know, and maybe they'll buy, you know, the Game Boy to distract their kid when they're flying in an airplane for 6 hours or something like that. But it's not really mainstream enough. And until it hits that critical mass and it becomes a mainstream medium, something that you actually see reported on, I don't know, the local news, and it's not something strange like, oh, you know, look at all these crazy, wacky geeks lining up for a PS3. Ooh, you know, and look, they're going for, you know, all this money on eBay, and then you never hear about us again on the mainstream news, unless it's a shooting or something negative, of course, which gets pressed. You know, yeah, the industry does need to grow up, but I think that's just gonna have to happen naturally as more and more people are gamers. And I think it is, like, you know, I'm in my late 30s. There's a lot of people here, especially, you know, the people up talking that are in their 30s and 40s now. They're having kids, you know, and you know their kids are growing up with it. You know, I say about another 10 years, I think it's gonna sort of tip the scale where more people are gonna be gamers than not.
I think that last decade was the MTV generation. We are the gaming generation. I think that's what the year 2000 essentially was, because all of the next generation consoles at the time came out, and just since then it has made the move to arguably mainstream. I mean, when you're talking about the numbers that were happening in the 80s compared to the numbers that are happening now, I mean, it's exponential.
It is, but at the same time, I can easily go on the street and talk to, I'd say, 9 out of 10 people who do not own a PS2. And I mean, I'll be honest, there's very, very few women here. I mean, you know, I'm not being sexist. There's almost none. I mean, there's a lot of guys here, and until it breaks that barrier, you're only hitting 50% of the world's population. Less than 50%, because we die.
So, Do you think that consoles need to become commoditized?
They are. They are becoming. I mean, they have to. It's not that they have to be. They have to be cheaper. I mean, that's what's happening with the Wii. And people were saying, "Oh, you know, the Wii." But they're showing that if you could first come out with something that's cheap and easily accessible to anyone, you are going to get a lot of people interested in it. We will gripe that the games aren't as good and the graphics aren't as good and the power isn't as good, and all the hardcore gamers will say, "Oh, I don't understand it." But you know what? The hardcore gamers are microscopic compared to the rest of the country, and they don't care about the things that we care about. They might care about it peripherally, but they don't care about it the way we do, where we get in a bunch because, oh, these graphics are just not quite as good, and oh, it's driving me crazy. But I mean, I gave the Wii controller to my 2.5-year-old daughter, and she figured it out immediately. And I'm like, okay, I cannot even get my parents or grown adults or people that I know to figure out the Xbox 360 controller, and a 2.5-year-old can figure out a Wii controller. That's amazing.
Right. So I think that that even though we hardcore gamers, and I count myself among them, make up such a small percentage of the gaming public and the public in general, it largely is due to our hype about the Wii that it got the press that it did, which then launched it as a arguably mainstream phenomenon. I think that if we had ignored it, as we do so many titles, can we say the N-Gage, that even though the price point is low, or even though it, you know, may be great, I think that it probably wouldn't have reached the level it did as quickly.
I actually disagree, and I'll tell you why. It's because, I mean, working in press, you know, professionally before, is that, you know, they're looking for stories. They're looking for angles. You know what? Bashing on the PS3 was actually a good angle. I mean, it was like, hey, it was, you know, it was something. And they know this. You know, these guys know this. Having a, you know, they want to have a winner and they need to have a loser. And PS3 was trying to be the winner, but they didn't do it. And the Wii was able to be a winner, and not only be a winner, but by having a feel-good story of like, hey, this is the gaming system that first for everyone. It's a lot of fun. It's in short supply. Everyone knows who Mario is. Everyone knows who Donkey Kong is. You know, you can't really, you know, the PS3, PS2 doesn't really have a defining character. The press was able to tap into that because a lot of the people who wrote these articles know nothing about gaming. You know, they're probably not even technology writers. You know, they're just sort of putting something together because their editor tells them, we need a story on this because everyone else is doing a story on this. And, you know, that's, I think it's just sort of became like a self-fulfilling prophecy, sort of generated its own. It's sort of, it's called like a spiral effect where it just keeps getting bigger and bigger and everyone else had to jump on it. And also, make no mistake, when big newspapers like the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal and the Washington Post take these stories, everyone else syndicates them. So if they're going to bash the, you know, PS2 and they're going to compliment how great the Wii is, that's going to go out to thousands of newspapers throughout the world. You have anything to say?
Right.
That was pretty good. So the other thing they were bashing on real quick is that I'll talk about, they were talking about Nintendo. They were bashing on Nintendo left and right. They were saying the Wii, and I heard this a lot from a lot of developers in the last couple of weeks, is that they really hate the Wii. It's extremely underpowered. It's extremely slow. They can't do good AI. They're not going to be able to make good games with the Wii, and that they're actually upset that it's doing so well, and they actually like the PS3, which is so weird because it's like, you're like, what? And they actually will like the PS3 because it is so powerful that they can make beautiful graphics. And not even that, it's that they have enough horsepower that they can make very good AIs, that they can make really, truly, you know, innovative games and not have to really tax the system. And that was pretty surprising because I imagine a lot of these guys are now going to have to now somehow reverse engineer the games, or I wonder if they're going to have to make their games work on the Wii, which is lowest common denominator, and then they're going to suffer when they go to the Xbox 360 or the PS3. That was surprising.
Right, that was my comment. Well, I mean, ultimately, the Wii is a souped-up GameCube, which is, you know, yeah, something that
actually
been saying since the beginning.
Yeah, they said it was, take two GameCubes, duct tape, and then you get a Wii.
Right, I mean, that's, you know, so The Wii, ultimately, for me at least, is still gimmick. I haven't really seen a killer app for it. I know everyone's going to talk about Zelda, and that's fine. You can talk about Zelda, but it really doesn't do it for me. And I picked up a couple novelty titles, like the Surgery game and WarioWare. And those are great, but, you know, I play my Xbox 360 every day. And I play the Wii when my girlfriend's over and wants to play Toe Jam and Earl. So, you know, I don't know. I think that the gaming community will actually suffer for it. I think that they're right. I think that we do, because there are a lot of titles and a lot of money being spent on Wii titles, and I think that that's money that could be going to development of actually next generation games, not last generation games with awesome controls. Mm-hmm. I had something else to say, but I
can't remember. Yeah. But you know what? Is there room for two types of games? Is there room for, you know what? You can do a Wii game pretty inexpensively. And that's not something that's lost on the developers, too. It's like, can you put together a cheaper, almost like, I would almost call it, it's not third generation, next generation. It's like 2.5 generation. You know, it's almost like almost a professional casual game, the Wii. You know, put out a game, have a smaller development team. And Nintendo talked about that a lot last year in their keynotes tomorrow. I'd like to see what they're going to say. They talked about, you know, especially on the DS, that they can come out with very strong games that do extremely well, like Brain Age, which was an incredibly small team, done very, very fast, made an absolute ton of money. I think they're going to try to do that on the Wii. They're going to come up with the Brain Ages. They're going to kind of take the DS success and convert it onto the Wii platform. And I wonder, is that going to cannibalize themselves? Are they going to be able to sell the same game twice to the same people? Or, you know, is this going to be a success? Or is it, are you saying, a flash in a pan that we're going to see now and then over time just going to fade?
I think that we've already seen that they can sell the same game to...
That's true.
To people, I mean, let's look at Pokemon, for example.
Yeah. And how many Game Boys do you have? I mean, I have like 15.
Right. No, exactly. You know, it's just it's that whole thing. And you know, a lot of people bought the DS twice.
Yeah, I did.
Exactly. You know, I'm not a handheld gamer by any stretch of the imagination, because I really don't like moving. But yeah, you know, Nintendo's put themselves in a very interesting position, and I think that we're going to... I'm very curious to see how it kind of pans out over the next 9 months. I think that if they keep the development schedule the way it is and they push all their first-party real quality titles back to fall or November of next year, and, you know, I think that we're going to see sales drop off and I think it's going to hurt. Now that I've said that, actually, they probably won't drop off, because there's a big enough percentage of people out there who actually aren't gamers like I am, who will buy it just on the promise of Wii Sports.
Mm-hmm. And what about their kids? I mean, they're going to come out with a lot of kid games, and you know what? If there's a good game that comes out that my kids can play for the Wii and they can figure out how to do it and they're 5 years old, I'm going to definitely get it for them. I mean, and there's one thing. I mean, I did a lot of casual games, and one of my biggest clients was Nickelodeon and Nick Jr., and I did a lot of Blue's Clues games and Little Bill games. And let me tell you, parents will spend anything for their kids. They will spend, if it's, and especially if it's educational or learning, and if the Wii manages to tap into that, like they've already kind of done with the DS, forget it. This is going to not even be close. The Wii is going to destroy the other two systems, and the hardcore gamers are going to wonder what the heck happened, and it's going to be Little Bill and Nickelodeon all the way to the bank.
Right, and that's, you know, the price for that success would be alienating the hardcore gamers, and even the regular gamers, really. I mean, I think you've got three tiers of gamers: casual, hardcore, and then the guys in the middle. And I think that by going the route that you're talking about, they would make ridiculous sums of money and would alienate the hardcores to the extreme, and would...
But who cares?
Right, I know, who cares? So that's the question. That's the question is...
Who cares? They're making all the money.
Can they make it next generation? I mean, let's assume the Wii is a absolute bona fide success. What do they do next? What is their next console? Or do they just live off the Wii for 10 years?
They live off the Wii, man. And they just keep... They come out with the Wii 2. Look what they did with the Game Boy. They're actually... I said this before when they first announced the Wii, is that it was a brilliant strategy. They're taking the success they had with the Game Boy. They converted it onto, you know, taking a very easily accessible platform and converting it into a console where they make money on every single thing sold, that they don't concentrate on the latest latest and greatest. They concentrate on ease of accessibility, and again, they laugh all the way to the bank.
Right, and differentiate themselves from not only the other consoles, but from computers, which is something that most that the other consoles are, you know, as the 360 and PS3 are moving more and more towards being high quality media stations. We've got the Wii on the other end, on the entire other end of the gaming field, just picking up the pieces, and there are plenty of pieces to be picked up.
So what do you think about the 360? I mean, we've been talking. I mean, they obviously, I spoke to Microsoft, and they said they're keeping a really low approach, you know, at this GDC. That, you know, they don't have a keynote. They don't even have that many sessions. They've been really kind of quiet. You know, they're kind of letting Nintendo and Sony do their thing. But, you know, I'm trying to think about, you know, it's like, you know, we had Gears of War come out. You know, yeah, we have a new Halo coming out, which, you know, in my opinion, is not that great a game to begin with. And I don't know why what the big appeal is for that. You know, but are they going to be able to keep up this momentum for the next year?
I think that Microsoft is in a much worse position now than they were 12 hours ago. And I think that that's something that they're probably very aware of right now and having many meetings about, because the PlayStation announcements were out of left field, and it's going to hurt them a lot. They're going to feel that. Because, I mean, like I said, I'm on the 360 every night, and when I pick up a PS3 and get that home thing going on, that's going to pull a lot of my attention, and that hurts them more than anything else. It means I suddenly have a split console house, because I really don't consider the Wii competition for my attention, really. And so that means I'm going to buy less Xbox 360 games, and I think that I'm very much not alone. I like to think that I'm kind of indicative of the hardcore gaming mindset.
Well, you were. I wasn't at the blogger breakfast this morning where you got to talk to the Microsoft guys. But what did anything come out of that was groundbreaking?
You know, the thing about the blogger breakfast this year and last year is that it's well-trained executives.
Yeah, that's the issue. I mean, I usually don't even try to talk to Shane Kim and these guys is because they won't say anything.
Right. No, they're very good at what they do. You know, you talk to someone like Peter Molyneux and he's like chomping at the bit to tell you all of the secrets, and then he's got the handler there kicking him in the back of the leg. But, you know, the blogger breakfast is always an enjoyable thing, and but, you know, there's no real new information. Forza looks pretty. Shadowrun will probably be fun. You know, the thing that Microsoft needs to capitalize on, and I really hope they do, is their Vista to Xbox 360 connection. Yeah. And that is a service that they could exploit, and do incredible things with. And that would set them apart. But right now they're not, at least not that they're talking about.
Well, it's not ready yet. That's the problem. They didn't have it ready for launch. And I've been talking to developers, again, that are pissed that this is not working. And by the way, that was the other thing, is they were talking on the developer rant. They were furious with Vista. They said none of the games worked. You know, they said unless it was a Microsoft product, it was incredibly hard to install their games. It was moving their data around. And I mean, I've been fooling around. I have a Vista laptop, and I'm going to about to convert it back to XP because it is really hard. I can't get my games to run. I mean, I have a few on there, but it's like even basic applications I'm having a lot of trouble with. And you know, with XP is really a smooth system, and I'm wondering, it's like, what is going on with Vista? It was supposed to be the gaming platform, and it does look a couple things that are very cool, but you know, there's a lot of issues.
One of the things that I brought up at the talk this morning, you know, for me, there's no selling point for Vista. There just isn't. I can play all the games that I want to play on my XP machine, like you were saying. And one of the things that they could absolutely sell me on the system with is if they took that integration between the 360 to the next level. If Velocity Girl, I hate saying that, could design her special skateboards on the PC and then transfer it over to the Xbox, you know, or have some sort of marketplace on there. And just, there needs to be, even if you are on your PC and you can get an invitation, you know, that'll just pop up just like it does on the Xbox to play a game on the Xbox or on the PC, that would be huge. And that would be a selling point for it. And really, right now, they're not ready to do that.
I will tell you one thing, and this is sort of secret, so I'll just tell you, Andy. Don't tell anyone else.
Okay.
Is there's a game called Two Worlds that's coming out for the 360. It's sort of like an Oblivion-type game. In a little while, you're going to find out something very interesting about the game that sort of harks to what you're talking about that I think will sort of level the playing field. But, of course, I can't say anything because it's not ready to be mentioned yet. So, but you'll see. Just check out Two Worlds, and you'll find out.
Okay, Two Worlds. I'll check that out.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool game. It's if you like Oblivion, it's sort of like an Oblivion type game, but there's going to be more to it, you'll see. So we're going to have to wrap it up because actually there's an award ceremony that I like to go to that's in 15 minutes. What do you think of the GDC this year? Because you didn't go, you haven't been to the one that's in the Moscone Center this year. And this, I've been going to this for 10 years, and in my notes, I said that there was more people at the press area for the keynote event that were actually at GDC 10 years ago, I think.
Yeah, my first GDC was last year, and even since then, the number has grown enormous strides. This is huge.
Yeah, I mean, this is insane. I mean, I used to be able to go to this thing and be like 2,000-3,000 people. There's like 2,000-3,000 people per event now, easily. I mean, it is absolutely gargantuan. It's actually going to E3 size, and I'd be curious to find out what everyone's doing here. I mean, I know what I'm doing here, but it seems like there's a lot of people are trying to break into the industry.
Right. No, absolutely. Absolutely.
So anyhow, let's wrap this up. Thank you very much, Andy. Gaming Andy.
Gamer
Andy. I know I'm Gaming Steve. It's like GamerAndy.com, a.k.a. Adam. You have to do something about that. You know you're going to have to legally change your name to Andy.
Oh, I think it's already my middle name at this point.
And thanks a lot for co-hosting the show with me. Have any final thoughts?
Tip your waitress.
And with that, I will bid you adieu, and I will talk to you tomorrow from day two of GDC. Thanks.
Listening to Gaming Steve. Until next week, remember to always finish him!